Recording in progress.
We just close the balance, that is substantiate the balance, that the balance may be incomplete, or it may contain certain balances that are not necessarily there. So therefore, we qualify it on that particular balance. He's working tightly in the background to try and get the supporting evidence so they can tick off and see exactly what is what, and then hopefully comment on the condonement process. But as that process was not finalized in the financial year, they incurred or they got another qualification on the matter again on irregular expenditure. So which means that that balance that management has disclosed in the annual report for irregular expenditure, the office of the AG is saying we are not satisfied with it. There's still some work that's required to be done, and it's for the second year in a row. But like I mentioned, management is working in the background to try and theory. Maybe they'll just need to hasten up the process to make sure that they conclude it sooner than later. On Yusuf, maybe Suhaid, you can help assist with the detail, but on Yusuf, there's also irregular expenditure that was incurred. Suhaid is jumping the slide now. But on Yusuf, it also deals with, like I outlined, the amount or instances of the irregular expenditure that was incurred in the financial year, for which when we came and we audited, we found additional evidence that there could be potentially other irregular expenditure that management did not adequately disclose, and therefore resulting in the reporting. Then there was a comment that was also made, Honorable Chair, through you by our Honorable Tembu. Syntec, the clean audit, I think the question or the comment that was made seems to sort of ask what management will do to arrest the situation going forward. So from our point of view, we put the recommendations forward to say they need to really implement those daily and monthly controls to make sure that they prevent incurring fruitless and wasteful expenditure, and then also to make sure that the action plans to deal with the prevention process are fully implemented and monitored by management. So the plan of how they will deal with it, maybe they will be in a better position to help and help the portfolio committee and give exact details of how they will go about to address it. Honorable Chair, I hope I've addressed all the questions, having tried to provide some context as well to some of the issues. But we still remain here to the service of the portfolio committee. Thank you, Chair. Thank you, members.
Thank you. I take it that the honourable members have been responses to the first set of questions. But as I indicated, we would also use the report as the basis to engage the other presentations as the department and the entities would be coming before this committee. If there are no further questions for clarity, I must then take this opportunity once again to thank the Auditor General's office, the whole team, for coming before the committee, taking us through and clarifying matters that need to be clarified. Let me also remind you, honorable members, that there is a form in terms of feedback that you need to give as a way of also helping to improve the reporting that comes before the committee. Please make sure that you do fill those and indicate to Ajira if you've already sent through your form. Check on your emails because that is online, so you can easily do that and send through. But just for purposes of monitoring ourselves, that we inform the committee secretary if those would have been sent through by members. Once again, as I said, thanks to the team, and of course, not want to keep you on the platform. If you would want to be excused, you'd leave the platform quickly. So as we get to the other presentations, thank you. As I said, honorable members earlier on, that there was a request from the TCIS to really afford them the first give an opportunity to better introduce himself. And I'm told that the minister has logged in, and I'm sure he's seeing him soon. Honorable Minister, as we acknowledge your presence, just to repeat the approach we're taking in the meeting, that would take the political overview from the political leadership, which then gives you an opportunity to also bring matters that are of interest to the public and the committee from the point of the department. And thereafter, they would then give the department and the entity concerned. And that will be a few minutes because we have received the presentations and we'll just highlight certain points when the departments come in. And therefore, members will then engage so that we release you to still continue doing the work there, both the political as well as the department and the entity. We'll then proceed to the Department of DCDT and the entity that's before us, which is the SABC, and then conclude our discussions. I take it that Honorable Minister, Mr. Kumbele, you'd be ready to take the platform and address the committee. Over to you. Honorable Minister.
Chairperson, I've just received a notice that the minister is being connected at the moment. If we can just give them a chance, thank
I'm trying to maybe also maximize the time as the minister is trying to connect. I do see that there was still a member struggling to connect. Is the Honorable Majosi connected now?
Yes, Chair, I'm connected.
Okay, and Honorable Bene. Maybe once we await the minister is just to keep you abreast that in the adoption of the program, this will help in you planning your week. That because we'll have those that may not be able to present as they are still outstanding reports like SAPO and CETA, we have then resolved to amend the program and bring the two entities that were to present on Thursday, that they will then present tomorrow, which will then free up the Thursday. I would also come back to the committee members in regard to us finalizing the adoption of the reports on the appointment in the SABC board, the one vacancy that we interviewed for, as well as the MDTA two vacancies that we completed interviews for. The office will get in touch with yourselves to check availability. I know that in terms of the program, they were put quite late in the month, but there was also this view that we should bring them closer, and there may be other members of the panel that may be affected in terms of presence at the time. But that's an example. People come back to yourselves in that regard. So please take note of that. So there are changes with regard to Thursday, as well as readiness to engage on a report to be adopted by the committee that could be ready for the House anytime you get the space to finalize the appointments. So I just thought you should be aware of that. Can I then take in the meantime whether the minister has now been able to connect? Honorable Minister Kungwela?
Yes, Chair. I am available. Thank you.
Thank you, Minister. I was already trying to lobby. You may have to deduct the green. You know, when you have green, both the entity and the department, you may then think that there's no need to come before us. So if we can just deduct and turn a part to be yellow, you'll probably come ready. You're welcome, Minister.
Thank you, Chairperson. May I greet you, the entire committee, and being with the PM, Swaya. Greet all members and any attendant who is around, and thanks for the opportunity again. I thought, Chair, I wanted to say, it's the first time I appear before the Portfolio Committee because of the nature of the work I'm doing. And I just want to say up front, it's never my intention not to appear. And I'll be in and out because we're dealing with the Cabinet Committees throughout the day, and the DM will always be around. And thank you for that understanding. Thank you, Chairperson, for this invitation for us to address the honorable members of this committee on the annual report of the Government Communication Information System for 2020-21 financial year. This is an unusual honor in two respects, Chairperson. Firstly, this is my first or second appearance before the parliamentary colleagues in my capacity as Minister and the President, I've already said. Secondly, I'm standing today in the footsteps of two predecessors who led the GCIS during the year under review. Firstly, I wish to remember and honor the late Minister Jackson Mthembu, whom we lost as a nation and a government on Thursday, 21 January 2021, 2 months before the close of 2020-2021 financial year. You are an outstanding and a widely respected and admired leader in our society and in our political home, the African National Congress. And he was a dedicated, ethical, and exemplary member of the National Executive. Chairperson, it is therefore fitting that we will reflect in this committee on a year of performance by GCIS that serves as a dignified tribute to the leadership and inspiration provided by Minister Mthembu during his tragically short tenure in the sixth administration. I'm also indebted to my most recent predecessor, acting minister in the President Khumbuzo Tshabeni, for championing and guiding government communication after the passing of Minister Mthembu. I thank my predecessors and our deputy ministers for my inheritance of the department and its related entities that are dedicated to serving the nation and serving government. This dedication is accompanied by the values and energy demanded of us by National Development Plan and by the priorities we have set for this administration. Chairperson of the members, the 1st of April 2020 was far from an ordinary start to an ordinary financial year. A week earlier, on Monday, 23rd March 2020, our President Cyril Ramaphosa announced a three-week lockdown to contain the spread of the coronavirus, which had made its way to our country. 10 days after the start of the financial year, the President led the send-off from O.R. Tambo International for a team of South African National Defence Force and the Department of Health who travelled to Wuhan in China to repatriate South Africans from the epicentre of the coronavirus outbreak there. This was the start of an extraordinary year for us as individuals, as a nation, and as government that had never confronted such a deep and sustained challenge to our very existence as human beings. Chairperson, while the enemy was unseen, its ravaging effects were not. People suffered illnesses. We lost thousands of lives in quick succession. Our health facilities and personnel in the public and private sector were overrun. Businesses closed. People lost their jobs. Poor people became even more desperate than they had been. And the social interaction was reduced to zero by the regulations of the national state of disaster, except the IT and the fort in their cell phase took over communication. That's how people were able to interact mainly. Government's response entailed comprehensive and innovative interventions in health, social assistance, and efforts to protect livelihoods. As chair of the African Union during this year, we played a significant role alongside governments across the African Union in mobilizing continental and global resources to protect lives and livelihoods in Africa. But instead of conducting our relations in a crowded rooms with handshakes and hugs, we learned to mute and unmute and acquired other skills as the world turned to virtual platforms to engage. At the heart of these changes in our society and economy was the Government of Communication and Information System, which bore the responsibility to coordinate a complex and costly national and international program of communication. In the 2020-21 financial year, was a period during which government continued its efforts to grow the economy, build a capable and ethical state, improve the living conditions of South Africa, and contribute to a better Africa and a better world. However, the onset of the COVID-19 pandemic came to dominate every aspect of national life and of government as actions and partnerships for the year. South Africa was confronted by unprecedented challenges that mirrored global public health and economic crisis. This situation created unprecedented demand and responsibility for official communication. As the pulse of communications in government, the Government Communication and Information System responded to this challenge with a range of interventions. GCIS coordinated all of government communication on all dimensions of pandemic. We place a focus on the depth of successive ways of illness and death. We help South Africans understand the serious threat posed by an unseen enemy in the form of a virus. We worked with the epidemiologists and behavioral scientists to empower the nation with information on how best to protect themselves. We also created information resources that gave economically vulnerable people access to the broad range of economic and social relief measures that government had innovated. Our communications extended to the global community so that the people in our region, on our continent, and around the world could understand the implications of our national state of disaster for inbound and outbound travel.
We build partnerships with communicators in civil society, including organized labor, business, as well as faith-based communities and traditional leadership, to ensure messaging was clear, consistent, relevant to all sectors of society. We developed strong partnership with mobile network operators and global social media companies to make better and wider use of social platforms and the posting of messages on these platforms to reach audiences. Our communication supported and profiled South Africa's role as chair of the African Union and President Ramaphosa's rapidly developing role as the chairman for the fight against COVID-19 and the fight for vaccine equity at the global level. While our communication relied on evolving scientific insights, we dealt as vigorously with the dangerous and disruptive reality of misinformation and disinformation. We explored and exploited the facilities offered by the technology that allowed us to work and communicate remotely. We refined our political principles, and especially the president and the term president, in hybrid or virtual sessions within the country and multilateral platforms. Chairperson, 2021 was a year in which communicators were confronted not just by the demands of communication, but by the human impact of the pandemic itself. We lost communicators at national, provincial, and local level, and we lost thousands, myriad of South Africans, but we soldiered on. GCIS was active in the Interministerial Committee on COVID-19, led by the Deputy President, Honorable David Mabuza. GCIS was active in the NetJoints, public mobilization and communications were extreme. GCIS coordinated media briefing, public webinars, engagement between district champions and communities, regular briefings by cabinet clusters and individual ministers, and facilitated technical support to the president and the president in their virtual and physical engagement. Apart from the highly anticipated my fellow South Africans, as president was usually known in addresses by the president, GCIS ensured that through its own communication platform and through mobilizing communicators across government, GCIS profiled the broader program of actions of government. The launch of new infrastructure projects, the showcasing of new investment in the country, our fight against gender-based violence, and the spectrum of economic opportunities for young South Africans were the bedrock of GCIS campaigns and editorial agendas. On COVID-19, GCIS coordinated a national communications partnership that brought together communicators in government and sectors of civil society as part of ensuring that the public was served by clear and consistent messaging. Chairperson, in a different area of service delivery, GCIS oversight of the Media Development and Diversity Agency aimed to ensure that the effort to grow the media sector in our country would not be gravely disrupted by the health pandemic. And GCIS began the process of reversing some of the setbacks we had experienced at Brand South Africa in the period building up to the COVID-19 pandemic. GCIS management and staff remained true to their mission, even when lockdown provisions or viral threats and outbreaks at Sidi Mosetso House meant that staff had to work remotely for extended periods. With the close of the financial year came the opening of a new door of hope and survival for South Africans and every living in our country. That was the door of the progressive rollout of vaccines and our ability to provide greater safety for everyone in South Africa. The virus and vaccines demanded unprecedented ways of communication in which we had to provide information and assurance domestically and to people and organizations who wish to interact with us across the borders. Where our challenges as well, but you will have seen from the data in our annual report that Team TCIS held the fort with distinction and diligence, though we didn't deny that there could be some challenges. None of this would have been possible without the support of participation by the President, the Team President, ministers, premiers, and local government leadership for an extensive program of communication. We owe our leadership a debt of thanks. Neither would this have been possible without the collaboration of our peers and partners in government and the public sector more broadly, as well as in civil society, and we thank everyone who worked with us. And we dare not forget to appreciate the oversight work that took place and sustained the intensity by Parliament even during those difficult circumstances. I express my appreciation to TCIS management led by the Director General, Ms. Kumla Williams. Finally, I thank the committee for its stewardship, guidance, and diligent oversight, without which the 2020-21 would have been even more difficult for us to navigate than it was. Welcome your reader, your ideas, and the support, and we remain committed to being the pulse of communication excellence in government, especially as long as your stewardship and then checking us by yourself will continue unfettered. Our annual report narrates these initiatives in much greater details than I can share here, and we'll share with you a brief video production that places a spotlight on our achievement. I dare say, Honorable Chair, that before the DG comes in with that video, that one of the things we are already looking at, which is not appeared in what I've just presented, is that we are already looking at developing a policy that ensures that responding to society and communicating messages in line with the constitutional provision to a greater degree through policy is no longer a discretion of various organs of state, but is aligned with, in line with the constitutional requirement. That policy soon will be coming to the fore for consideration by Parliament. Thank you very much, Honorable Chair, then for the opportunity, and I hope then the DG will actually come to the stage if he so allowed. Thank you, Chair.
Thank you, Honorable Minister. Indeed, we once again welcome you to the committee and understand the point you've raised that given the other meetings, you may not be with us until the end. We hope it would have been done, TCIS. I want to also indicate that we did receive an apology from the Deputy Minister. Deputy Minister Swe, that should be with us until 12. We are not done with TCIS and the MDDA. So we really appreciate your presence. We have given strict time allocation, not because you would have requested to come earlier, but only because we need to manage the time. So your video would be within that time, because after your presentation, we have 15 minutes for the department and 10 minutes for the entity, and thereafter engage your report. So if you can manage that within that period, that would help the great business. Thank you.
Thank you, Chairperson. DG, can you take the stage as guided by the Chairperson?
The 2020-21 financial year was a period during which government continued its efforts to grow the economy, build a capable and ethical state, improve the living conditions of South Africa, and contribute to a better Africa and a better world. However, the onset of the COVID-19 pandemic came to dominate every aspect of national life and of government actions and partnerships for the year. South Africa was confronted by unprecedented challenges that mirrored the global public health and economic crisis. This situation created unprecedented demand and responsibility for official communications. As the pulse of communication in government, the government communication and information system responded to this challenge with a range of interventions. GCIS coordinated all of government communications on all dimensions of the pandemic. We helped South Africans understand the serious threat posed by an unseen enemy in the form of a virus. We also created information resources that gave economically vulnerable people access to the broad range of economic and social relief measures that government had innovated. We built partnerships with communicators in civil society, including organized business and labor, as well as faith-based communities and traditional leadership, to ensure messaging was clear, consistent, and relevant to all sectors of society. Our communication supported and profiled South Africa's role as chair of the African Union and President Ramaphosa's rapidly developing role as a champion for the fight against COVID-19 and the fight for vaccine equity at a global level. While our communications relied on evolving scientific insights, we dealt as vigorously with the dangerous and disruptive reality of misinformation and disinformation. Working as communicators in support of the national executive, we were required to become more agile and inventive in our professional practice. We explored and exploited the facilities offered by technology that allowed us to work and communicate remotely. We adopted webinars and virtual engagements as fundamental tools of trade. We refined participation by our political principals and especially the president in hybrid or virtual sessions within the country or on multilateral platforms. We embraced sign language more closely and turned to loudhailing and pamphleteering when COVID-19 health regulations prevented face-to-face engagement with communities. We lost our beloved, passionate communication champion, Minister Jackson Mthembu. We lost our communicators at national, provincial, and local level. We were forced to set aside our own losses and sadness as we provided communication support to regrettable successions or funerals of eminent South Africans from all walks of life. But we were there as well when the first rays of hope for vaccination broke over the pandemic horizon towards the end of the financial year. This required new waves of information, persuasion, and inclusion as we sought to inform and inspire South Africans to protect themselves and enable our march towards economic recovery and the transformation of our society. This task is not done, but it is a task that is well started. Vaccinate to save South Africa. It's our best shot to curb the spread of the virus.
Thank you, Honourable Minister, the Honourable Chair, Honourable Maneli, am I audible, please?
Yes, you are. You are honourable, am I okay?
Thank you, Chairperson, and the Mayor, I ask Ms. Thorpe to put up the PowerPoint, please. So, Honourable Chair, the Minister of the Presidency, Deputy Ministers present, and the Honourable Members of the Committee, colleagues, Chair, we are resorting to the opportunity that's called a picture speaks a thousand words. So we have the presentation before the committee. We thought the video would share with the committee just that very visual and very graphic image of the year ahead. For me, Honourable Chair, my job is going to be very short on behalf of the DG who is also in the committee today. If you can just put a slideshow, please, Ms. Sotsi. As the colleague from the Auditor General said, and as Minister himself said, Honourable Chair, Honourable Members, no ordinary year indeed, but we do believe that as we found the year unfolding, we found adaptability, flexibility, and can-do attitude among our staff, which allowed us to achieve these results of 85% against the set targets of 47%. In the program one, we had a 90% achievement. Program two, a 75%. And in the program I'm responsible for, a full achievement this year. And resulting and culminating in a clean audit for the year. So as we go to the slide, I'm going to ask our CFO, the Acting DG of Corporate Services, just to speak briefly, Honourable Chair, to the money side of things. And then my colleague Tyrone Seal will take us to the end with just sharing with the Honourable Members in a few minutes the areas that we did not achieve and why we didn't make them. So Honourable Chair, I do hope that the presentation will add enough detail. And we will be available for colleagues for comments afterwards or for questions. Ms. Sopley, could you please just speak to the committee about our budget, please? Thank you.
Thank you, Mr. Karen. Good morning, honorable members. I will take you through the financials. As GCIS, compared to 2019-20, we spent around 312.1 million out of our total allocation of 725 million, and this translates to 98.2%. This 712.1 million was our contribution to the national government expenditure, which is a key factor in determining the national GDP, which is the gross domestic product. For the current year, for the 2020-21, we had underspent 13 million, which is as a result of the 9 million that was underspent on COE, which is due to natural attrition of staff as well as vacant posts. However, we managed to reduce our vacancy rate from 10.5.9% as reported in the 2019-20 to 8.4% in the 2020-21. However, for the current financial year, for the first 6 months of the year, we have managed to reduce the vacancy rate further to 6%. Then the underspending on the goods and services rounding to was due to the fact that we had around 3.4 million underspending due to lower government transport, and also we had lesser recovery on the books adverts, and also we had around 2.7 million on the lesser adverts on the books and as well. Then lastly, on transfers, you also had around savings of 172,000. That was the allocation that was given for the institution. Over and above the allocation, we also allocated 50 million for the COVID-19 communication campaign. Of the 50 million that we allocated, we managed to spend 11.8 million for the first quarter, which was a really tough quarter for us because it was hard lockdown, and we had to make sure that as GCIS we ran to ensure that we managed to communicate on the COVID-19 restrictions and protocols. For quarter two, we spent around 26.8 million, for the first quarter 10 million, and 6.5 million. We are proud to say that for the year under review, the COVID-19 communication campaign, as reflected also on the video that you said, is that it yielded a good result in terms of ensuring that we change the behavior of the South Africans holistically. Thank you, Chairperson.
Thank you.
We'll
take us to the underachievement slide, please, Mr. Please. Mr. Seal.
Thank you, Michael. Good morning, Chairperson, the Honourable Minister, Honourable Deputy Ministers, Honourable Members of this committee, and my colleagues in GCIS and in the broader oversight family that we're a part of. So, good morning, all. Chairperson, you asked earlier for those areas in light yellow, and so it is with some sadness that I can say we have delivered on your expectation. We did underachieve in a few areas, not through any malice, neglect, or any incompetence. A lot of these underachievements were occasioned by the external factors, and I'll take us through that now. In the area of paying businesses within the city, we have achieved 92% of our target. Now the yield height for us, it's still below what we are used to, which is something north of 95%. But this did happen because we had challenges in our supply chain management unit with the virus itself, and the unit was closed down periodically. This is also a unit that uses transversal IT systems that cannot be accessed remotely, and so that affected our performance in this area. With regard to some of the platforms and products that we operate, we fell short by 850,000 copies of Zukuzumzele newspaper. It's a product we are very proud of. It's a very important information resource, especially for communities in our very urban areas and in rural areas. But here we could not print the paper or distribute it at the early stage of the pandemic, because at that point, companies weren't allowed to distribute products hand to hand. And so we were affected in that area, but we then resorted to publishing online. In the case of Public Sector Manager magazine, which is a monthly publication put out that serves public service managers, that contributes to our objective of building a capable and ethical state. It builds pride in managers who are ethical, who are dedicated, who are innovative, who are creative in their work. And so there was one edition couldn't put out, and the only reason for that was our submission of the foreword of the ministerial foreword at the time of the transition between the late Minister Ntembu and Minister Jordan, and that delayed the product. But again, we were able to proceed with that online. In terms of our photographic and video services, I think the Minister alluded to this, and certainly our video indicated the activity of GCIS's own photographic and video services in providing support to our political principles and in profiling the work of government. In this area of work, we are used to receiving a very high number of requests from departments and entities of government who call on us to provide video and audio documentation of the work of government. But because of the reduction in the number of physical interactions by departments and entities, we dropped to 81% in one instance and 97% in the case of video services, simply because fewer requests came in from outside. I've touched on the marketing and distribution issue. We're looking at slide 23, Chairperson, where there was one edition of Zukuzumzele which could not go out, as I indicated, because of the restrictions at that stage on hand-to-hand deliveries. We are pleased to say that the last issue that was a yellow has since been resolved, and that's the appointment of the MAC Council. We thank the Minister for finalizing those appointments. And those appointments were returned to us originally because our political principle felt, and justifiably, that the selection of candidates who had been tendered wasn't fully representative, especially around the youth sector, and as well as women. So there was a process where they had to go back to the industry, as we are expected to do, to ask for fresh nominations, and we are pleased that we have a very representative list of South Africans who are now serving on the MAC Council. And so I move to a close on slide 24, Chairperson.
to say that in the year which our minister so clearly and adequately describes, we continue and work very hard to perform our mandated duty of providing information to South Africans as directed by the Constitution, even under COVID-19 restrictions. And we say that because COVID-19 and everything we needed to do around that was an affront to constitutional rights. People couldn't move, people had difficulty accessing work, etc. And those are all very fundamental human rights and constitutional rights that came under pressure during that time. But we ensured that that people were armed with information that would allow them to carry on with life as they could. The Auditor General has already reported that during this year we received an unqualified audit with an overall expenditure of 98% against our allocated budget. I have said that our underachievements were largely occasioned by the pandemic, which impacted negatively on a number of areas we have planned for. But we are very happy that we saw this year through, both by mobilizing internal resources within GCIS, but also working very closely with our colleagues in communications across the government-wide communication system. And we were very, very well supported by political principals who really came to the fore, took the task of communication as a fundamental function of leadership, and through that were able to remain in touch with communities in the country, but also were able to reach out to our global partners and people who had been used to traveling to our country for leisure or for business. And of course, we hope that as we have already seen changes occurring in the current financial year, we hope that in the balance of this financial year, we will see further stability, further safety in our society, which will hopefully unlock a further return to normality in our economy and help us that apex priority of government of putting South Africans to work. Thank you very much, Chairperson. Thank you, Michael.
Thank you, Chair. Mr. Fields. Chairperson, just one last remark that I thought was worthy to tease out for the honourable members. Please, we do want to draw your attention to some of the good news stories. Even before the launch of the ERRP in October, we had started profiling some of the economic opportunities program and ramping that up in the end of last year. And we are really proud, as you said, and they're all available on our website. Please have a look at people like Seashells Brew, a small company that was employing 3 people in 2018, and the latter part of last year employing now 20. He's got products in ShopRite, in Pick n Pay, in Woolworths now. We have a Bella Bella poultry farm that's gone from strength to strength. So those kinds of good news stories about the economic recovery, as Mr. Steele indicated, are very, very key on our content plan moving ahead in the new year. So Honourable Chair, the Minister and the Presidency, our DM, we hope that it hasn't been too short to give a sense of where we've been in the past year. Thank you very much, Chair.
Thank you. Of course, would take the MPDA, like I indicated, to give them 10 minutes. I've seen earlier on that the board chair is also on the platform, as well as the CEO. I take it that we'll be guided then from there, how they are approaching the presentation in the 10 minutes under the political leadership.
Thank you, Honourable Chair. I think it's going to follow like that, but I have not been advised exactly who is going to present, but I thought I wanted to reassure the committee that we have agreed with the DM that he's going to stay until the end of everything. Thank you, Honourable Chair.
Thank you. Honourable Minister. MDA.
Honourable Chair and members, I would like to take the opportunity to thank the Minister and the Deputy Minister for their stewardship. I'm not going to say much other than to say that the CEO and her leadership team are on the call, so they will take over. But before they take over, Chair, I'd like to thank the Minister for swiftly assisting us by appointing the broadcast representative in the board. And I'm aware that he is finalizing the print site. The nomination has come through. So that is going to be coming through in not so far distant future. And I was pleased that you indicated you have completed the process of interviews for the remaining members. That would make that would be very assistive for us in terms of a complete board. With those words, Chair, I'd like to hand over to the CEO.
Good morning, Honourable Minister, Honourable Deputy Minister, Honourable Chair of the Committee and Honourable Members, colleagues from other departments, and my colleagues from the MDDA. You know, this thing of having spent 10 years at the GCIS always confuses me. But I am at the MDDA. I am not alone. I've got the whole ESCO with me. So we will assist one another with the presentation. And I think on the sake of time, I'm just going to touch, like the chairperson has said. Chairperson, I must apologize. I'm trying to start my video. It's refusing. It says it's unable to detect my camera. I think the first thing I would like to say is to welcome our new political heads. I'm meeting the minister virtually here today for the first time. And so a warm welcome to you and Deputy Minister Gegana in absentia, and welcome back to our old Deputy Minister Siweya. Honourable Minister, I'm not going to go through the legislative mandates and all those mundane things. I think when we do get the opportunity to introduce the entity to you, we will then take you through all of that. I think in the interest of time today, I will just deal with the core business of the day. We operate under these three goals. A capable, effective and efficient organization, which I think we take from priority number 6 of the ethical state. We've got a second goal, which is core business, media diversity promoted through growth of sustainable community media based. The word sustainable community media based, Minister, is our key focus and honorable members in the next years to come, and you will see why I'm saying that. And the last goal is where we capacitate, we train, and we conduct media research, but we also seek to digitize the sector so that we're able to move with times. And you will see that the MDDA is implemented through these programs. It's 5 programs. I'm not going to deal with the strategic objectives and the missions and the visions. I'll quickly then touch on the key highlights for 2021. The auditor was already alluded to the fact that we were awarded the clean audit outcome for 2021 financial year. And in September, Honourable Minister, the Parliament swiftly also appointed 4 board members. They were appointed by Parliament in September 2021, and so the board is not in a bad space. And we were also able to achieve a 7.3 vacancy rate by the end of the financial year, down from 27% at the end of the same period in 2019-20. So we really did push to appoint people virtually last year. In terms of project support, which is one of the things that we would like the honourable members and the honourable minister and the ministry to take cognizance of, is that even though we did receive an additional 6 million from MultiChoice, which is our largest funder. In fact, they've given us about 52 million this year from a 40-year agreement, which is 3 years, but they've been increasing. But that I think we have lost a lot of money when the print sector did not or stopped funding the MDDA in 2014-15. Honorable Minister, we are bleeding in that area, in that in the next 3 years and the past 3 years we've been projecting and been dispersing just about 2 million of to that sector, and we receive over 110, 111 applications at any given time when we issue the call for applications. Honorable Minister, honorable members, due to the COVID-19, we also saw the need to, for the first time at the MDDA, the board approved a 20 million emergency relief for the sector, and we also were able to then disperse about 16 million of that. We also, because we were concerned about Centec or our stations and battling with the signal distribution costs, we also then got the board to approve about 18 million, which was paid towards Centec. And Minister, I don't want us to feel to sound like we're biased towards only broadcasters that are distributing through Centec, that are broadcasting through Centec, but that we are able to assist those that are also self-provisioning, meaning they own the transmitters and they would want maintenance from time to time. We've had a lot of engagement, but one that I'm going to highlight is the fact that last year, having had all these engagements, colloquium summits, stakeholder engagements, we took a view last year that we will add as one of our targets. In fact, it's one of the targets that have not been met. We then decided that we will actually compile and collate all this information that has been going as government, as this entity, to the sector to ask, what are you struggling with? And we added to the summit that we had in 2018 for both print and broadcast sector. And we said, let's have a consultative conference that will delve deeper with why is the sector struggling with sustainability. So we called it a consultative conference on sustainability research, and therefore we invited the sector bodies, the government, the UNESCO, and so many others, the academia, so that we're able to debate this. And the aim for this conference was for us to actually emanate from it or emerge from the conference with consulted and agreed upon terms of reference for the sustainability research, which is taking us to a sustainability model for the sector. And Minister, we're hoping that when we are turning 20 in 2023 in January, that sustainability model, whose research has now started, that it will be launched, and it will be launched at your level. I'm not going to deal with a lot of the slides, but just to highlight in terms of capacity building, the sustainability model I have spoken about, and because it is one of the targets that we could not meet at the end of March, and the reason was that, as the CFO would explain, the tender was unresponsive. We had to re-advertise, and there was a point where National Treasury systems were down. We waited, but I must say that we have now an approved research company. We should have started with the work approved by the board. We are also preparing the sector for a digital flight. So the board also approved last year a digital migration strategy. We have submitted made a submission or proposal to the MICT CETA so that it can work with us. We also work with CEDA, we work with NEMISA, we work with VEST Radio Academy. We've got so many other partners that can assist with this. But also we've approached the telecommunications, because our minister was beginning to say, if we would like our projects, print and broadcast, to actually have a digital footprint, and given the high cost of data in South Africa, who do we partner with? So we have approached some of the telecommunications, and they're happy and they're willing to work with us. We also have got Facebook South Africa assisting us with the digital migration and training some of our projects and so forth. Media literacy is one of the areas that I think we have not been focusing on. Now we're targeting schools, and I think this is something that the president in this administration has championed, to say that we must ensure that media literacy and culture of reading throughout our society, and the MDDA has indeed seized with that. I'm not going to delve deep. on this one because these are just internal matters. But in terms of the lockdown, the staff, I think, went at home and rotated at alert level 2. And I'm happy to announce that we had no fatalities. We had 3 positive reported cases. And I think it was people going around at home and so forth and doing their own businesses. But we worked down more than, we worked at home more than 90% of the time. I have already alluded to the emergency relief. And I think that our projects, they actually appreciated very much. $20 million emergency relief. The first $10 million, Minister and Honourable Members, were in packages of $45,000 for content generation, telecommunications, which was data and telephones, fuel and PPEs were very important because we wanted still our entities, print and broadcast, to still be able to go out, generate content, news and information, particularly around the pandemic, so that people knew what information was important for them to save their lives. We fully dispersed that first $10 million to 114 stations, 1 television, and 116 publishers. And so we also dispersed, I think we started on announcing in May, the second $10 million, which I'm saying we're only able to disperse about 14,000, and the other $2 million was a rollover. We were able, as the GCIS says, that the late Minister Mthembu championed the message from the NCCC. In fact, the MDDA participated in those weekly meetings that were chaired by the late Minister. Minister and Honourable Members, we also sought donations from other companies, even though we didn't get money from some of them. But in, for instance, Facebook and Google opened doors for us to actually partner with them in the future. And as I'm saying, Facebook is on board now, and we left with Google South Africa. We'd written to Standard Bank and National Treasury, and even though we didn't get any money, but because they told us that their focus was on the health and the pandemic, we were happy with that response. In terms of just how the organization has been performing over the last 3 years, we picked the organization in 2017-18 at 44% with unqualified audit, and in 2018-19 we moved to 80% unqualified audit, and in the past 2 years we've had achieved a clean audit, 84% last year and up to 89% in this financial year. And I will just quickly touch on the non-achieved targets. It's 2 of them. The first one is that community media sustainability research, which I've already explained. Minister, it's very important for me. This slide is very close to my heart because this slide has put the sustainability of the sector under spotlight. And our strategic thrust there is that we want to build a resilient and future-forward community and small commercial media print. So you will see that these pillars, in fact, if you were at the conference, they were commissions. And the commissions then deliberated on each of these pillars to say what should be researched under each of these pillars. And so pillar number 1 talks to the digital flight, and it talks to technology, use of technology by our projects, innovation and signal distribution. Signal distribution, Honourable Members, Honourable Minister and Deputy Minister, is an issue that needs us together to actually take cognizance of. Even though Centec will come and say it is discounted, but we find over time, over and over, that our stations, our televisions get switched off by Centec because they are not able to afford even the discounted rates in terms of signal distribution. Where else should we look at? We're now beginning to think that perhaps we must research whether this moving towards self-provisioning is an idea that works for the MDDA. Corporate governance and compliance, we've seen where there's lack of or poor governance and lack of compliance by stations, therefore they will not be able to do business with the state or any other partners for that matter. So we encourage them, we train them in that pillar. Content generation, we would like our stations to actually generate premium content. We have partnered with CEDA which has got six, I think, content hubs in six provinces, and we're partnering our projects with CEDA to ensure that we are able to professionalize and we are able to draw a lot of investors in terms of advertising, because we are playing and broadcasting and writing premium content. Pillar number four is driven by the mother department, which is the GCIS, because it's on transformation of the print media. And honorable members, honorable minister and deputy minister, you've already heard me say, even though the government and the commercial broadcasters and the major print had agreed when the MDDA was formed to actually support the sector, print media left us in 2014-2015, and I think we would know that it is also because it is losing a lot of money. Minister, we're beginning to say that in pillar number five, either than the money that the GCIS appropriates to us, or government appropriates to us through the GCIS, what can small business do? Because we've got small commercial media. What can post office do? What can post bank do? What can CEDA do? What can IDC do? What can the national lottery do? So we are beginning to say, can we therefore consolidate government support? We're wanting to speak to founder, for instance, and or Porter to say, these stations, especially radio and TV, occupy big offices in sometimes in malls, and they pay huge amounts on rental. And when they fall behind the rent, then they get in trouble with the landlords. We find them the equipment has been confiscated. We must go to court, fight for it. I cannot belabor more the audience measurement. But if you want to go to your Coca-Cola's, to your PPC Cement, SABA, AB InBev, and Corporate South Africa, the first thing that they ask us about is how many people are listening to these community radio stations of yours, Zugiswa. I think those were the two. Unachieved targets: the sustainability one, and the one on the election training. And I'm happy to announce that both of them have now been achieved. We actually trained a broadcast and print on the 11th and 12th of October, just before the elections on the 1st of November. I think now I will take you, because I'm not going to take you through the achieved targets. I'll allow the CFO to quickly talk to how much exactly did we disperse, and how much to which of the areas that we disperse or we spend our budget on. Over to you, CFO.
Good morning, Minister, Deputy Minister, Chair, committee members, and colleagues. Chair, in the interest of time, I'm going to try and be as swift as possible. During the financial year, the MDA had approvals about 55 million towards projects. The disbursement payments were around 57 million, Chair, and there were some write-backs. We've got commitments of about 91 million. Currently, as the end of the financial year, our total commitment. Chair, for to see this picture and understand how the payments are made and why the payments are made as such, is that the MDS process works on a tranche payment. It works with two, three, four tranches that is based on a project. There's certain deliverables that need to be achieved before the next payment is done. So all the payment is not made all at once. It takes place in those tranches. And as I said previously, it will be based on the requirements of the tranche agreement, the schedule of particulars in terms of what was required when we started up front and agreed, and that is how the process will be unfolded. So we can go to the next slide, if I'm going to speak to the next slide. I think so. Do you want also to jump in here quickly?
Now, I think this slide, honourable members, honourable ministers, are just to then, because by law we mandated to therefore make this information available even through our annual report. This is just to show to the honourable members and the minister and the deputy ministers that these are the projects that were approved under the period that we're reporting on. And I think the CFO has then dealt with how much. And I think, honourable members, I think what I would like to highlight is the pain we have in assisting the print media, as I've said, the small commercial print, the community media print. We've got six targets that we can fund with this 2 million that we have year on year. And believe me, we get about over 110 applications and over 90 compliant applications. And from that 90 or 80, we must only choose 6 because we can't afford more than 6. Even that 6, we're talking about 300 and something. Sometimes we just choose to give you laptops, just equipment, 90 something thousand. The project, even though the projects would have applied for millions, but Minister, we do not have the millions to give to print, unfortunately, as a result of what I've already explained. This is how our sources of funding are looking like. Broadcasters are actually leading the pack. What we also did, Honorable Minister and Honorable Members, seeing that the COVID was staying with us longer, we then wrote to our largest funder, which is MultiChoice, which we have acknowledged that it has been giving us money and gradually increasing it over the last 3 years, given us an additional 18 million. And so we actually even tendered to them a thank you letter a few months ago. We then wrote to MultiChoice, worried that their non-discretionary fund may actually reduce. And we asked them last year that they actually consider increasing their discretionary grant, which is 13 million, to an amount that was going to be guaranteed in irrespective of whether their revenue dropped or not. And they did agree. They increased it from 13 million and I think to 20 or 25 million as CEO, as CFO, if I'm not making a mistake. Government is staying at 38 million, but we know that because of the constrained fiscal, this is going to be going down. Interest on investment is also impacted negatively by the favorable interest rates, but we can't blame the Reserve Bank for that. Honorable Minister and Honorable Members, these two red areas, which we are saying, in terms of the provisions under the Section 15 of our Act, where we are allowed to actually also go foreign donations and accrue money lawfully for as long as it's from a lawful source. We are saying the board has now approved the fundraising strategy, Honorable Minister, and we are saying we'd like to prioritize this. And I think this will therefore, once we want to increase our support base, not only financial, but also other resources, Wi-Fi. We're looking at speaking to the telcos about that. Can they zero rate some of these projects, URLs and so forth? Any other partner that will bring value to the MDDA or to our beneficiaries through the MDDA. So we will be, after the strategy has been finalized because it's being laid out, we will actually then speak to the ministry about how do we then get the ministry to lead, especially the foreign leg of the sustainability, sorry, of the fundraising strategy, whose aim is to augment the sustainability model that we are busy with. CFO?
Thank you, Sam. So I think you've pretty much touched on all of this in your presentation, and I think you've given an indication in terms of how our funding comes from the broadcast funders, our grant income, the interest that we receive, the decrease in interest as you've indicated, our expenditure for the year, the grant expenditure, how it's been paid and what it's for. Sam has also spoken to the vacancy rate and how we've accelerated the process in terms of employment. I think pretty much at the end of the financial year, that's the picture that we have as the MDDA. I think, so if we go to the next slide. Thank you. So I think you're on mute.
I'm sorry about that. I was looking for the key to unmute myself. I was actually going to say that slide, the last one, I was not going to belabor the point because it talks to those 6 pillars of the sustainability model. And I think with those words, we end there at the MDDA. Thank you very much, Honorable Members. Thank you very much, Honorable Deputy Minister and Honorable Minister. Thank you.
MDDA. Thank you, Minister and Deputy Minister, as leaders of the team. As I said, they would take up any points that members would want to raise so that we are able to release those of you who must attend to other tasks as we'll be proceeding with the remaining two presentations. May I now invite honourable members who would want to speak at this point? This honourable Bele, I note your hand. Any other member that I may not be seeing on my side? Honourable Mbele, you can put it. Please proceed, Honourable Mbele.
Thank you very much, Chairperson. I hope I'm audible. And just greetings to you and the fellow members and everyone on the platform. I had tabled my apologies that I would log in late, but just to say sorry again that I missed the first portion of this morning. Chair, I don't have any particularly burning or pointed questions in relation to the last two presentations, except I think it's worthwhile just to make the comments that I would like to recognize and applaud the seeming great efforts and progress that the MDDA has been making with regard to its sustainability sort of development model and approach and strategy. I seem to recall that has been the standing sort of forefront discussion and concern in the committee over the past year, whenever the MDDA appeared before us and was briefing us. So it is pleasing, and I would just like to sort of express and echo my, and I can imagine I speak for the committee, support for that picture, and to say that I wish them much success as they hopefully roll out aspects of that going into the new calendar year. That's all from my side, Chair. If any other questions do occur to me, then I'll raise my hand again. Thank you.
Honourable Matt Joseph, noted, you are now recognised, can proceed.
Thank you,
Honourable
Chair. Yes, thank you, Chair. My apologies, my network is very bad, so I'm not sure if maybe putting on my video will then affect it or not. But on a nutshell, Chairperson, I couldn't even log in this morning because of the same issue of network. But on a nutshell is that GCIS, it has never disappointed us as a committee, and with MDDA as well, it has shown improvement over the past 2 years, and now it has come to a stage where you can actually see the success, and it's all positivity. There's absolutely nothing that maybe that is negative that we are going to say or maybe of concern within the two entities. And but also just to emphasize on the GCIS that in terms of communication, we are very happy with the communications of the pandemic that has been rolled out by the GCIS. And but also to say that when there is that level of maybe going to level one and so forth, then there shouldn't be any lack of awarenesses on the messages. They should keep on telling people that vaccinate. This is, you know, everything must then proceed normally. It shouldn't then lag because of maybe now we're on level one, and then when we start being on level three, then you see messages that are coming now and then. But I think they must then keep the momentum, even if it's level one, but keep that momentum to make sure that the awareness is out there. But yeah, all in all, Chairperson, we are very happy with the progress that has been done by the MDDA and NGCIS. Thank you.
Honorable Machozi. Ajara, is there any other hand that I don't see before I make my comments and allow the ministry and the entity to respond?
I don't see any, Chair.
Okay, thank you. I think indeed I want to join the honorable members that GCIS has not disappointed, and we appreciate the improvement in the MDDA. And we call it improvement because there's a time when that glory would have been gone if the MDDA had problems. Of course, some owing to instability in the board, as well as the key appointments that needed to be made. And I think given that it's almost a new board that we have in MDDA, at least they themselves have said it, that they found solid foundations built, and it is against this that you can still continue to have a clean audit. The HSA, Honorable Minister, whilst you would have not connected, indicated that it's always difficult to sustain clean audit. Of course, I'm saying this except for GCIS, because you know the number of years that this would have happened. Because we're also looking at the transformation of the country, which, as we appreciate it from a point of institution, we should also appreciate the leadership appointments that have been made, in this case, particularly women in the year of Charlotte Matlage, really divorced from that. That when space and time is created, you can get the best image from them. And for that reason, our policies of ensuring that they are empowered are not misplaced. So I think it's important to mention that point. But also the importance of ensuring that from a governance point of view, we ensure that boards at no times do they collapse. Neither do we leave entities without proper leadership over a period of time. I think these are lessons learned here, that if you stabilize on those, there should be no progress of getting things done. So I just leave with that. But because when you do well, we do not expect you to have any challenges, even though the structural challenges, but we don't expect you to have to just emphasize that when you have the findings that you need to deal with, which one is MP, and that is part of the report, given that we're in the third quarter already in this financial year, some of the matters that were raised are already addressed, that Minister and Deputy Minister, as well as your team, just to ensure that you do not have anything that gets to be repetitive in findings of the Auditor General, because then that can undermine the work that has been done over years. But a year that we are discussing, indeed, we do understand that the COVID may have resulted in such, but as moving forward, we should demonstrate that we are able to keep both the clean audit and the delivery thereof. You've raised the point, Minister, and I know you said it's still going to come before Parliament,
but we sincerely appreciate the thinking about looking at communications for what the mandate of the Constitution is. And we think in the way you've handled the communication as desires, Honorable Machos has already spoken to this during the hard lockdown and so on. It has proven that if government communicates one message centralized, South Africans are able to hear and would have less contradictions that get made by different departments, where at the end the whole of government is held accountable for such mistakes. So if you can keep that up, we will still really appreciate the committee. Otherwise, you remain the pride of the committee, and we still believe from what we've been able to do that even the others will still keep the clean audits in future. So we're very confident as the committee. But as I said, we would give you an opportunity to respond before we allow you to join other activities later on. May I then hand over to yourselves if you would want to make any responses at this point, Jim and the team.
Thank you, Chair. Let me greet yourself and the Minister in absentia and everybody else in the platform. And just to appreciate the words of encouragement that you have given us. The reality is that we would not have been able to do all of this great work that you're talking about if we did not have a strong leadership led by yourself from the side of the portfolio committee. And we really appreciate the frank conversations which you continue to talk to us about, so that we are able to correct and ensure that we live up to our mandate. We are really humbled. The one other most important thing is that we remain committed, especially the ministry in relation to giving political oversight, to allow the leadership of the board and the entities, and in the context of the DG in DCIS, so that they can be able to do their work and be able to deliver. What we have noticed is that sometimes as political principals, if we interfere too much in administration, you end up discouraging your colleagues and they are not necessarily able to work. And we can assure you that we want to ensure that come the 5 years of this sixth administration, when we point back from 2019 to 2024, with the graph must have gone up and not gone down. We're going to ensure that that happens to the fullest. We've had the advice which was given by the AG at the beginning of the presentation, so that we can tighten up other loose ends which might be there. You'd remember that, like you were indicating with MDTA, that when we overtook, we found it at a very crumbling place, and over time we've gradually been able to move, and we are hoping that we can do that with the advice of the Auditor General. The other issue is in relation to, and we want to thank, and we continue to thank them, the GCIS, that during the pandemic, we were able, number one, to stabilize the institution in relation to filling our vacancies, filling them with skills which are compatible with what is looked for. And I think that has assisted. And this is what, even when we talk with our other colleagues from other sister departments and they ask us, how are you able to do it? We're able to say to them that you must not interfere, you must place the skill with competency and allow them to be able to run. And we've had the advice that now that we're on level one, for example, it does not mean that we must reduce in relation to communicating about COVID, vaccinating, and so on. And you'll see we are going to continue to roll out your smart vaccination program, go out, utilize community media platforms to continue to demystify the myth that the jab is a problem, and to teach our people and empower them throughout. So I think we are fine, we are happy, unless the board chair maybe wants to say something. But we really appreciate the support that you continue to give us and assist us to continue to build from where we are. Thank you.
I have nothing to add, Chairperson. I think we can proceed from there.
Well, thank you, PM and the MTPA board chair. I take it that we would have completed the part that relates to GCIS. Would be releasing you, including the MTDA, if you have other personal matters to attend to as we proceed to DCDT. Thank you. We'll now take a presentation from the department as well as the SABC. Of course, this will be preceded by the Deputy Minister giving the committee a small address that takes into account matters that you'd also want to bring the committee, the committee to its confidence as well as the public of South Africa. This will also present an opportunity for you to also briefly talk to the entities that will be coming before the committee, including the SABC. Thereafter, I would give the department, again, on the same basis, okay, 15 and the 10 minutes. So that's more sharing of the 25 after the deputy minister would have spoken. Thank you. Dear Mapulana.
Thank you very much, Chairperson. Let me just do this. Trying to fix something here. Okay, thank you very much, Chairperson. I hope you can hear me. And good morning.
Yes, you are audible and you can see you. Thank you.
All right, thank you very much, Chair. And good morning to the Minister and the Deputy Minister and the Honourable Members of the Portfolio Committee and everybody on the platform. And thank you very much, Chair, for the opportunity to that you have afforded for the Department to present the annual report for 2020-2021. I'm just going to make some few opening remarks, and the details of the presentations will be made by the acting Director General together with the team from the Department. Chair, as you might be aware, that almost 2 months since we were brought into the department, myself and the minister, who has submitted an apology. We have been basically in the process of orientating ourselves about the tasks that are to be executed in the department and the challenges that are faced by the department. And as you know, during this reporting period, we were not part of the team that was leading the department. The department for this reporting period had about 32 targets that were set in the APP. 16 of these 32 targets were met, which represents about 50% performance of the department, with an expenditure of about 97%. The department has received an unqualified audit opinion with findings, and it has developed an action plan to address some of the findings which the AG was briefing us on. The reason for this regression, Chair, I think as you may have picked up from the Auditor General's briefing, arises from some of the outstanding issues that were coming from the Department of Communication. As you were all aware that this department is the result of the merger between the then two departments. less on the performance share, the department has been able to obtain approval of the digital economy master plan, as well as just commence with the implementation of the priority areas that were identified. During this reporting period, Chair, we have been able to provide broadband service to about 970 sites which are connected through a program of SA Connect. And we have also finalized the feasibility study for the phase two, which were assisted by the DBSA. I must say that currently, through the leadership of the minister, we are looking at developing a revised delivery model for the SA Connect, working together with the implementing entities in the department like Centec, BBI, CETA, as well as South African Post Office. In terms of cyber security, Chair, the department has been able to establish a legal entity called OMREC, which serves as a cyber security incident response team for the mobile operator sector. We're also in the process of developing a cyber security strategy. The draft strategy has been developed for consultation with relevant stakeholders. Together with NEMISA, we have commenced with the process of the implementation of the digital and future skills strategy, Chairperson. Let me just briefly reflect on some of the areas of underachievement, one of which is the organizational structure. Since the merging of the two departments, my colleagues, Chair, we have not had a formal organizational structure that talks to the new department. We are in the process of finalizing that, the details of which will be reported by the DDG. But I must say that following the minister's directive, the department is working on a new operating models that identify particular work streams, which will inform the final organizational structure. One of also the issues that we did not achieve is the tabling of a number of pieces of legislation, for the South African Post Office Amendment Bill, the South African Broadcasting Corporation Bill, and the Post Bank Bill. We have made extensive progress in this regard, and we intend to bring this bill firstly to Cabinet, and after Cabinet approval, we will be tabling them in Parliament. The other issue, Chair, is the finalization of the performance management system for ICASA councillors. There have been a round of engagement with ICASA. The draft PMS system is ready. ICASA has since requested that they would like to have the last round of engagement with ourselves to finalize this. The other area of non-performance or underachievement is the finalization of the policy direction of the 5G spectrum. This has not been possible due to ongoing litigation by the telecoms. The matter has since been settled. And ICASA is in the process of finalizing the allocation of spectrum through the process that they've published. publicly communicated that they would do it through auctions. They've developed their timetable. The anticipated date for the finalization of this process is around end of March next year. But this is a process that is led by the regulator. We are picking up that there is some litigation, I think, primarily relating to the withdrawal of the temporary spectrum that was allocated by ICASA. But it's a process that ICASA is dealing with. The other issue of that we have not been able to achieve is around the BDM program. As the DG's office has indicated, that cabinet in August adopted a new revised program or plan to migrate from analog to digital, and that plan is being implemented as we speak. It's coordinated and led by the steering committee, which is led by the minister, with all the relevant stakeholders participating in that program. I'm sure the committee is well aware that in as far as this area is concerned, we have dropped the ball. There have been countless delays in finalizing this digital migration. We're hoping that with the new revised plan, Chair, we should be able to meet the 31st of March deadline as announced by the President during the State of the Nation address. Jefferson, it's important to recognize that the department was, like all other South Africans, impacted by COVID-19. Now, Chair, the DG, I think, will be, I don't want to get into the details of this. The DG should be able to take the committee into confidence around how the department has really been impacted to an extent of some of the allocated funds being redirected to help government to respond to the impact of COVID-19. Otherwise, Chair, with that, I think we should be able to be ready to ask the acting DG to present the annual report of the department. I wasn't sure whether I should also do the CCC one, Chair, but I will ask that if I'm expected to also give the highlights of the SABC annual report. We allow the department then just before the SABC comes, I should be able to be ready to check my notes so that I'm able to brief the committee on some of the key issues that we have identified as the minister. Thank you very much, Chair, for the opportunity to address the committee.
Thank you, PM. You'll do that before the SABC. Thank you.
It's a good afternoon, Honourable Chair, as well as Honourable Members. Thank you very much, DM. Chair, I think that the Deputy Minister has touched on quite a number of what is in the presentation. Also, I'll just quickly highlight some of them. The Deputy Minister has indicated that we faced numerous challenges during this period, as we anticipated that the lockdown was only going to be for a couple of months, and unfortunately we couldn't extend it beyond, and we're still under lockdown. And this resulted in a number of delays, mainly due to the external dependence dependencies that we have in as far as our work program, and I will touch on those.
Yes, you do need substance.
If we can then move on to slide four, please. Our performance wasn't as good. Unfortunately, we only achieved 50% of the target when the financial year ended. And the other 50, there were delays. It's not that the targets were not, there was no work that was being done. Apologies, Chair, for the, we'll start again. Slide five, where I'm at. As you know, that with the merger of the two departments, ours then was to work on a new organizational structure. With what we did was to succeed in terms of achieving a
recording stopped.
Plan. Chair, I hope you are still. You're still able to hear me.
I'm not sure if other members may have problems, but you are audible.
Thank you, Chair. And we also worked on the integrated digital transformation strategy as the department, which we were then able to also implement as we were working remotely, and also introduce new areas in terms of technology enabled for us to optimize on this. I also want to put in a disclaimer there, Chair, that we struggled with us obtaining the tools of trade for everyone in the department, especially in terms of our lower level staff, but nonetheless, we tried to optimize on this. In terms of the invoices, all invoices, valid invoices, were paid within the 30-day period. And also with regards to another area of achievement was on the country position. Despite the fact that the globe was under lockdown, we managed to hold our BRICS ministers meeting online virtually, and equally we were also able to convene the UPU, Universal Postal Union, meetings, and as such we were able to achieve that particular target. There was one delay that was related to the WTSA in this regard, Chair. Unfortunately, the legal prescripts, the Constitution and the Convention of the International Telecommunications Union does not enable for virtual decision-making meeting to take place, and as such, the WTSA, the World Telecommunications Standardization Assembly, has been postponed to only take place next year. But we have been able to engage with both at a national level, so we formalized our position paper as a country, and we've also been able to engage with our regional parties in order to consolidate an African common position. With regards to another critical area where we also managed to achieve was the Digital Economy Master Plan. This is a critical instrument as we move South Africa to the Digital Economy Chair. And this forms part of the NTSF in terms of reindustrialization of South Africa. And the Master Plan focuses on five critical areas, and this is on digital inclusion, skills for work, a responsive governance, looking at issues of innovation and competitiveness, and also how do we bring in the SMEs, looking at areas of localization and industrialization, access on term for SMEs to participate in the economy, and also to broaden the participation beyond our borders, and also looking at issues of digital platforms and digital trade and services that would make South Africa competitive. And then lastly was the area of digitization and looking at the digital ICT products as well as the services. So we were able to achieve this digital economy master plan, which was finalized and approved. And then also linked to that was also we revised the ICT SMME strategy, and we were also able to implement and quite successfully ensuring that the SMEs are able to participate as well in critical programs. Under the oversight, as part of ensuring proper governance and oversight and accountability, Chair, my apologies, I think we're having problems with our slides, but I'm still on slide 6, and I will not go into the further details. But in terms of the SOC oversight, we were then able to ensure that the quarter 2 as well as quarter 3 performance reports of our 10 entities for the 2020-2021 were analyzed as well as submitted timely. Another critical area of work, Chair, stemming out of the World Radio Conference is the WRC outcomes. As a department, we were then able to analyze the outcomes and also came up with the National Radio Frequency Plan. This will assist in terms of South Africa's building capabilities for 5G as well as other areas of technology development. And as such, the draft National Radio Frequency Plan was then consulted with critical government players as they are service users, and then we subsequently, it was approved by the minister, we've shared that with the regulator. From the regulator's perspective, they're still to finalize. However, from our side, we also commenced, Chair, successfully with the ratification. Cabinet approved the ratification. It is now sitting in Parliament for the final leg of the ratification, and I hope this will also receive attention soonest. Okay, on the issues related to broadband, as a department, this is also another critical in terms of expanding connectivity, especially in terms of connecting government offices as well as the public schools and health sites. And in the last financial year, we successfully connected all 970 sites, and these were also monitored. And over and above that, owing to the fact that there are limited funds under the fiscus, we also embarked on a feasibility study for the phase 2 funding for the entire country rollout plan. And the feasibility study was done, developed, and the final report was then submitted. We worked on this together with ourselves and as well as the DBSA. On cyber security, Chair, in the traditional search was established for, as the Deputy Minister spoke of, and this was mainly for the mobile operators. This is also critical, especially under the area that we're at, and this also managed the issues with regards to cyber threats. And then on the e-government program, Chair, we managed to also ensure that government remains connected during this period, and as such, a list of priority services were sourced in from government departments, and these we loaded on the National e-Service portal. Another, lastly, the area of achievement was on the future skills program. Chair, we've worked a number of skills programs, and especially online courses were offered through Coursera, and this enabled for the people, society to basically obtain these courses online wherever they're at. Obviously, the only challenge would then be that you would need data to be able to access that, and as a department, we have been working on that. I'm happy to announce that under COVID, we zero-rated a number of education sites in order to enable the basic education as well as higher education training institutions to provide training. Okay, under the areas of underachievement, if we can move on to the next slide. 16 of these, as I indicated, were delayed targets. The first one was on the organizational structure. Due to the fact that we could not consult, firstly, all staff members in time because we were under lockdown and operating from home, and the fact that we also needed to consult critical stakeholders such as DPSA, unfortunately, this target was not fully achieved under the financial year. And I did indicate the target related to WTSA. Under the BRICS Institute for Future Network, as a country, we've worked extensively on this program, Chair. to the point of finalizing the legal framework for the temporal domicile of our BRICS Institute as for the South African chapter. Unfortunately, at the 11th hour, there was then a cover that was issued to us with regards to financial obligations to the tune of about 20 million. And as you would acknowledge that this was not budgeted for in the financial year, and it also being brought to us at the last month of the financial year. It was therefore difficult for us to source the funding. And as such, right now what we are doing is looking at an alternative and working with the network of universities in order to build on our capabilities on research and research and development. For the South African Post Office, the amendment bill, unfortunately what we were supposed to was to submit to Cluster and Cabinet for public consultation. Due to the delays where we needed to get the inputs from SAPO as well as the National Treasury, we were only able to submit it to Cluster as well as Cabinet post the reporting period, which has now gone out for public consultations. We've consolidated those inputs and we're ready to take it back to Cabinet for onward transmission to Parliament. On the South African Broadcasting Corporation, again, this is also another target that was delayed. This was due to the fact that we needed to obtain legal opinion, not just from the state law advisors, but from senior counsel on the independence issues related to Section 192. This led to extensive delays, and again, we were only able to submit it to Cabinet to the reporting on the data and the cloud. Here, as a department, we did commence on the data and the cloud, the development, and unfortunately there were extensive consultative processes for this, and this also led to delays. This was quite a topical issue that we had to have both provincial as well as a national colloquium in order to ensure that we bring all critical stakeholders as well as the South African community on board in terms of the intent that we have on data and the cloud policy. And we've now consolidated the inputs that we've received. There's over 6,000 of them, and we've now also ready to commence to submit it back to Cabinet. With regards to the PC4IR implementation plan, again, Chair, this was another delay target, and this was also it impacted because of the extensive consultation. We struggled to get national departments because what we wanted to do was to look at industry, national departments, provincial as well as local municipalities. We managed to get all of the stakeholders except for one government department to whom we were only able to get the engagement in March, and then we had to then take it through to Cluster afterwards. So that then led to the delay during the reporting period. With regards to SOC oversight, Chair, again, I think the AG spoke about this. There were delays with regards to two of the entities in terms of the tabling that was up as well as USAFA and USAF, and we were only able to achieve this post the reporting period. And then on the performance management for ICASA counselors, there have been extensive negotiations with ICASA on the performance management as well as the performance evaluation for the ICASA counselors. A draft was finally concluded amongst the senior officials in February. Unfortunately, we could not solicitate a date with ICASA Council, and we're only able to get one in June. And subsequently thereafter, it led then to the process of finalization, and the minister then submitted the draft management system to Parliament in the end of July. The other areas of unachievement was related to your the post bank bill. The post bank bill, unfortunately, also we could not submit it to cabinet as planned in terms of the time frame. And that was also with regards to the extensive consultations with cluster. And then the department was also asked to engage National Treasury and also seek then the concurrence of the Minister of Finance before bringing it back. We were then able to have the necessary engagement with the Minister of Finance, although it was, albeit it was delayed, and then we were then able to submit it. It went out for public consultation, fortunately, post the reporting period. And we're also going to be ready to resubmit this back to Cabinet, I mean, back to Cabinet, as well as then for on-run transmission for taping to Parliament in this financial year. The state bills, the Deputy Minister spoke about these as well. We also had challenges with regards to the Digital Infrastructure Bill, because we needed to get then the inputs from the state law advisors as well as critical government departments. Similarly, on the Digital Services Company Bill, and unfortunately those also we were able to only get the inputs post the reporting period. On the Digital Transformation Center, the DCD was not established as planned because as the agreement could not be finalized and approved by Cabinet. We were then asked to consult other key relevant departments who similarly have a transformation center in the likes of your DSI to then see how we can collaborate and work together. On the BDM, Chair, I think as we did provide feedback at the beginning of the year, the target was delayed with regards to both in terms of not meeting the targets in the distribution of set-top boxes, and also then there were delays from USASA's perspective in finalizing the service level agreements with all the parties. And unfortunately, we are now in the process of doing a catch-up plan. And also equally, we could not meet or do the voucher distribution, and we've subsequently adopted a revised model that Cabinet has approved in order to ensure that we conclude on this upon the set time frame that the President has indicated, which is the 31st of March 2022. And then lastly, on the policy direction on the 5G spectrum, Chair, we had drafted a policy directive as stemming out of the World Radio Conference. Unfortunately, due to the litigations that we experienced between Telkom and ICASA, MTN and ICASA, which obviously the department was cited on, we had to then put this 5G spectrum policy directive aside, because we needed to ensure that we actually finalized the auctioning as well as the allocation of the high demand spectrum before we move on to the 5G. The framework has been approved in terms of the 5G policy directive, and once we have finalized the auctioning of the 5G, the high demand spectrum, we will then be able to conclude on this. Chair, the rest of the slides basically talk to the in greater detail. So what I would like us now to do is to then move on to slide 22, where we're looking at the audit and annual financial statements. I will ask the CFO to take us through them. But as the Deputy Minister indicated, that we have addressed some of the audit findings, and we are also happy to indicate that a number of them have been addressed, and about 78%, and we are also then addressing the outstanding ones as well. I will ask the CFO if she could kindly take us then through the summary of the financials as well as the audit action plan through you, with your permission, Chair.
Thank you, ADG. Good afternoon, Honourable Chair and Honourable Members, and the Deputy Minister. Chair, with regards to the audit findings, the finding the findings that were highlighted in the audit report. The first one relates to the performance information on the BDM project, where the achievements that were reported could not be accurately verified by the AG. And also the action plan that has been made is that there will be recruitment of field monitors to strengthen the data collection and real-time field monitoring and reporting. And also the SPM unit will sort and analyze the detailed list of installations per quarter, as opposed to relying on the summarized progress reports from the SOE. And also they will be strengthening the relationship with the relevant SOEs to ensure that the information that is provided can be verifiable. And there was also another finding in terms of the misstatements under the advances and goods and services, and also the disclosure note. With regards to that, it's relating to the advance that was paid to CETA, and also which could not be, whereas the advance that was made, it was not indicated in the contract that it needs to be paid up as an advance, and we needed to reverse that payment check. Otherwise, in terms of the action plan, we have indicated that before payments are made, all the supporting documents will be checked properly and accordingly. And also on the assets register, there were other assets that were not included in the disclosure note, and the asset verification as we speak has been performed, and the asset register information is reliable. And Chair, also AJ also highlighted the issue on the irregular expenditure, the assessment of the prior year finding coming from the former DOC. The assessment was not done, and as we speak, Chair, we have completed this assessment. It's for the consequence management to be taken and to also present the report to the accounting officer. Chair, we have received an unqualified audit opinion with 28 findings, and an action plan has been drafted, has been developed, and we are monitoring these findings on a monthly basis so that we all these findings are addressed properly by the end of the financial period. Next slide, Friday. And Chair, by the end of the previous financial year, we were sitting at 73% of all the findings, and those that are in progress, Chair, in terms of the BE verification, the finding will be going away as we did appoint a service provider, and the assessment is ongoing, and we with a previous annual report, we did receive a preliminary certificate on this, and this finding will be going away, Chair. And on the organogram, it's relating to the organizational structure that has not been completed, and also the controls that need to be put in place with regards to the management of the leave. And also under IT, this relates to the IT infrastructure of the department that still needs to be upgraded, Chair. Next slide. Chair, with regards to the budget versus the expenditure, the department has spent 96.5% of its budget that has been allocated, and this is after the budget cuts amounting to 113 million that was received by the department. And Chair, we can indicate that due to the pandemic, this budget was mainly spent on the commitments, and the bulk of that went to the advances that were made were relating to the SA Connect project, and also and the monthly commitments, Chair. And then the understanding under the in the main, it's mainly related to the vacant posts that could not be filled, and also the salary adjustments that were not implemented in the previous financial year, Chair. Next slide. Chair, here I will only highlight, I think I've covered the first two. Under the capital assets, there were a few projects which are still in progress, and CETA is assisting us with this project, Chair. And that's why the funds under capital assets were not utilized. And also in the audit report, Chair, there was emphasis of matter where the investments that was made to SAPO in the previous financial year amounting to 8.1 billion was impaired by the department due to the negative net asset value of the entity by the end of the financial year. And also they have highlighted in terms of the loan that was issued to BVI in terms of its establishment amounting to 1.3 billion. We did receive approval to convert this loan into equity. Next slide. Chair, these are the transfers that were made, and all the transfers were made in line with the pre-approved schedule. And on, also to highlight in terms of the international membership fees, 39 million was spent towards those membership fees the department is affiliated to. Thank you very much, Chair.
Thank you, Chair. That concludes then the presentation from the department. Thank you, DM.
Thank you very much, Acting DG and the team and the CFO. We'd like to take this opportunity, Chair, and hand back over to you. I don't know whether you want the SABC one.
Yes, to come now. Yes, DM, if we can then something to SABC. So that we engage at once.
Okay. All right, let me just share. Let me just introduce the briefing by the SABC. Chair, the SABC seems to have stabilized, in our view, after the Section 189 process, which saw the reduction of staff to keep the personal expenditure within a reasonable range. And I think from the feedback we received from the SABC, from the Auditor General, it was quite clear that this process has contributed significantly towards the reduction in expenditure that was reported. Chair, the SABC has brought the matter to ourselves and the Minister regarding the dispute that they have launched with the Competition Commission and ICASA, requesting them to mediate on the dispute regarding the distribution costs. The SABC is identifying distribution costs as the second largest cost component in their books. And should I continue, Chair?
I'm sorry, Chair. I was choking just now.
Oh. Yeah. Thank you, Chair. As I was saying, that the SABC has referred to this dispute that it has with Centec to Education Commission in Newcastle. And the minister has since requested both parties to sit around the table to resolve this dispute, as the minister is of the view that both this entity belong to the portfolio of communications and digital technologies, the broader portfolio, and therefore this type of dispute needs to be resolved internally. And so that process of engagement is continuing between the SABC and Sentech. So this impacts heavily on the SABC, and also on the other hand, the AG has also identified as a risk, material risk, relating to the going concern status of Sentech, as it relied heavily on the revenue that it received from the SABC. And Chair, the SABC's corporate plan is mainly drawn from the turnaround plan, and as such, overall progress of its implementation, of the implementation of the turnaround plan, is incorporated into the annual report. And the SABC has reported a 74% performance in terms of the implementation of the plan as of 31st of March. And it's important to note that currently, as it stands, in fact, by the 30th of September 2021, the performance on the turnaround plan has been 85%, and I think currently, as we speak, it could be around 90%, which is a very good indicator that the SABC is indeed turning the corner in terms of the areas identified in the turnaround plan. In terms of the non-financial performance, there are 36 targets identified in the APP or the corporate plan of the SABC. And of these 26 targets, the SABC has been able to achieve 11 of these targets. So 15 could not be achieved. So this translates in the overall into their performance of about 42% for the 2020-2021 financial year, which is lower than the 59% reported in prior year. Now, the SABC is attributing its poor performance outcome mainly to the impact of COVID-19 lockdown restrictions on its normal operation, the supply chain management challenges, as well as the implementation of Section 189 process that resulted in capacity constraints in some functional areas. Of major concern is the fact that only 73% of the staff of the SABC signed performance contracts during the period under review. The current situation has improved in the current financial year. With regard to the financial performance change, the SABC has reported that it generated a total revenue amounting to 5 billion in the 2020-2021 financial year. This is a 6.3%, which is about 333 million below budget, and 12.3%, almost 700 million lower than the previous financial years, or 5.7 billion. It has also reported a total operating expenditure which amounts to 5.6 billion in the 2020-2021 financial year, which was 6.2 billion in the 2019-2020 financial year. SABC has also reported a net loss before interest and tax of 604 million at the end of the 2020-2021 financial year. This chair requires that more concerted efforts need to be put in place on revenue generation initiatives in the current and subsequent financial year. Chairperson, we share the concerns of the AG about the poor financial performance of the SABC, which impacts on its going concern status. The minister is seized with this matter in order to try and assist the SABC to turn the corner. The next financial year, I think, will be the last in terms of the three-year turnaround plan of the SABC. And the allocation that was made by the national fiscus will be almost the last year of the bailout. And so if not much is done in terms of ramping up revenues and reducing the expenditure in the SABC, we may find ourselves in a situation which becomes untenable. Of concern to ourselves, Chair, is the declining revenues in terms of advertising, which we've also expressed to the SABC to take much more effort to make sure that they address that area of concern. In terms of the Auditor General's outcome, Chairperson, the SABC has received a qualified audit opinion, as we have noted from the AG's report earlier on. The basis of this qualified audit was due to irregular expenditure, as the Auditor General has already informed this August House. The Auditor General, as we have heard, they've reported that they were unable to quantify and confirm whether the irregular expenditure amount of 2.9 billion disclosed in the financial statement was accurately determined. As we speak now, the SABC has reported that they are currently addressing the audit issues raised by the Auditor General. In a nutshell, Chair, that is the situation regarding the SABC. I must say that we are quite satisfied with the overall situation in the SABC, although, as you can see, attainment of the targets set in the corporate plan is not that impressive. But we are beginning to see stability. Stability has returned in the SABC. And the environment is such that the organization can turn the corner and make sure that the public broadcaster is positioned and is sustainable. Only if the areas of concerns around financial performance can be addressed. Otherwise, thank you very much, Chairperson. Chair, I'm done with my overview. I think if you allow, we can request the Chairperson of the SABC to give some remarks, and the CEO will then come and take us through their annual report. If you allow, Chair. Thank you.
Yes, the Deputy Minister has agreed would do that. They will work on the arrangement to utilize the 15 minutes.
Thank you, Honorable Chair, and Honorable Members of the Portfolio Committee. I also want to greet the Deputy Minister, colleagues from other entities, the Department, and the colleagues from the SABC. Today I'm accompanied by the Chairperson of ARC, Ms. Yasmina Patel, with the Group CEO, Mr. Madoda Mhlawe, CFO, Ms. Van der Leon, and COO, Mr. Plakis. In essence, the Deputy Minister has really comprehensively covered me on the statements, the introduction that he's made. It comprehensively covered what I wanted to say. I do want to indicate that as of
today we are sitting at about 93% in terms of implementation of our turnaround, which talks to the 12 months that our board is left with. We have to make sure that in the remaining 12 months we are able to deal with the issues that have been highlighted and conclude the implementation of the turnaround, which we are very optimistic. With the support we are getting from the Deputy Minister and the Minister, it's going to be possible for the SABC to genuinely and really turn the corner, as articulated by the Deputy Minister and also confirmed by the Auditor General, that we have our governance and internal governance systems in place and the stability at a leadership level, which is key in the turnaround of the SABC. I would want to, in the interest of time, to hand over to the CFO, who will just focus on some high-level financial aspects, because the Deputy Minister has comprehensively covered me and the CEO. Over to you, Yolandi, with the permission of the Chair of the Portfolio Committee. Thank you.
Good afternoon, Chairperson of the Committee, Honourable Members, the DM, my Chairperson and other colleagues here. As was indicated, we are going to move with speed then. I'm just going to get the right slide. Our turnaround strategy has been spoken about fairly eloquently, as well as the most up-to-date status. In this slide presentation, it really was also touched on by the DM in the sense that there's been stability creeping in the latter last few years. We have systematically been...
CFO, just check your camera. Maybe I'm the only one struggling to see you from where I am. Yeah, that's better.
This is better. We have systematically been able to reduce expenditure in the last 2 years, a little bit more detail around that later, but unfortunately our revenue has also been declining as much as it in the last two quarters of the financial year under review, as well as in the current financial year it has started to show some recovery. So what you see here is the 530 million loss that we are reporting for the financial year, compared to the 111 million of the previous financial year. Most notable in this slide is quarter one and two, that our revenue was 740 million of rand lower than what in the prior year, but we managed to recover that in quarter three and four, and ultimately total revenue was only less than 700 million than the previous financial year. Expenditure, employee cost has decreased, but a notable one-off item would have been the settlement fees related to the voluntary severance packages that amounted to 176 million rand. I'm not going to stand still at any of the rest. I'll talk a bit more in the next slide. What we do here is look at what the accountants are always so called a normalized loss. In other words, we exclude notable one-off items to be able to look at pure operational performance. And as a result, we can then see that the 530 million reduces to 364 million rand loss when we take out the single biggest item, which is the settlement fees. Also, over a five-year period, how the loss in the organization have systematically been showing movement in the right direction from 1.1 billion in 2017 to the approximate 705 million, that was 605 million before interest and tax for this year. Some notable ratios, which I'm not going to stand still at, we have work to do in each of them. That's the bottom line in that message. Moving on to revenue performance, and in this case, I particularly wanted to draw your attention to television licenses. We have managed to invoice 4.4 billion rand for the year, of which we could only recognize, based on previous trends and behavior of our audiences, 788 million. We have a database of 10.3 billion, and of that, only 2.2 million licenses were settled. Collections amounted to 866 million rand. In other words, we had an 82.1% evasion rate that continued to haunt the organization.
Then when I look at expenditure lines, I've touched on some of them. I really just wanted to draw your attention to content. The content investments have been reducing. You see the second biggest bar, which is the blue one, with the current year about just over R1 billion that we spent on content. But maybe just some context would be that under level 5, all productions stopped for 6 weeks to the end of May. Under level 4, productions had to adapt to be able to comply with regulations, and everything from local dramas, children, variety, entertainment, live and pre-recorded shows, reality shows, travel shows, all had to make adjustments for the phase we found ourselves in. In December, the second wave resulted in further stoppages, and we had to also implement further risk-adjusted approach to the topic. However, we are currently anticipating to spend about R1.3 billion in this financial year, and a number of initiatives are underway to be able to step up the spend. A brief overview on the impact of COVID. At the time of the preparation of this submission, we had 522 cases for the 18 months approximate to date. We budgeted $13 million to be spent in the previous financial year, but only required $3.6 million. Our work from home strategy forms further yielded savings to about $30 million, in fact, on all various operational lines. So that was also a good news message. The bad news is the impact that it had on our content production and, of course, on the revenue generation. Statement of financial position, I'm not going to stand still. Suffice to say that of the $1.4 billion cash on hand, of that about $1.1 billion was still ring-fenced for the bailout. And as indicated earlier, like everybody else, we were significantly hamstrung by disruptions to our supply value chain, as well as, of course, the impact on teams internally in the course of the year, whether it's related to the pandemic, the transition to the new target operating model, etc. As I then move on to the topics that have received quite a bit of discussion already today, I think it's important to firstly set the scene. Our opening balance reduced from R5.4 billion to about R2.8 billion as at the end of 31st of March 2021. The in-year instances reduced from $336 million in 2019 to $111 million in this current financial year, and I'll give a bit more context on that shortly. And just to explain that the AG's finding in particular relates to the opening balance as at 1 April 2020. We did manage to fully confirm the completeness of the register for the year that we're here to present to yourself. We have since progressively also confirmed the completeness of the 2020 year. We're about 60% concluded in that case. We've confirmed the first quarter of this financial year 100% as well. So having put in place a dedicated team to deal with both the opening balances, the condemnations, the investigation, and ensuring that we could appear a report, a completed register, we supplemented the team with a guideline on the prevention, detection, management, monitoring, reporting, etc. of irregular expenditure. We've put in place a consequence management guideline. And with all of these initiatives, we were therefore able to focus the AG's attention on the opening balance as opposed to the in-year instances. The same theme is applicable to consequence management. The concern related to some individuals in the opening balance that we still need to be able to apply consequence management to, but they were satisfied with what we had done for the 2021 year. With fruitless and wasteful expenditure, $21 million reported for the year, again systematic reduction over 3 years, and I'll elaborate a little bit more when I get to the detail of this slide. Speaks to the scenes, and you can see in the narrative, the majority of the irregular expenditure incurred in the year relates to transgressions in previous financial years. But as the AG explained, if the transgression relates to the organization not following its procurement processes, you do not have a foot to stand on to legally exit from the contract. The contract then runs its course, but you are required to report on the irregular expenditure for every year of that contract. So you see that in a few of the themes in the narrative on your right. You also see the reference to the standard operating procedure that we've put in place and the fact that there's work being done on consequence management. On fruitless and wasteful expenditure, the two main contributors were a lease entered into in the 2016-17 financial year. That lease concluded now on the 31st of October, so we no longer have this fruitless and wasteful expenditure burdening us. The other big thing is interest on repeat fees, which is an industry practice that dates back to 2007. We are currently in the process of changing this environment and the context via engagements with stakeholders, et cetera, to be able to ensure that we do not have that repeat finding ever again. Context I refer to on irregular expenditure. In particular, I want to draw your attention to the table on the right. You will recognize 111 million. And as I indicated, the majority of that relates to prior year transgressions, which we keep on reporting because the contracts are active. So of the 111 million, only 99 million, or only 11 million, or 10%, relates to in-year transgressions. And from where the management stands, we always hope that this is a reflection that the behavior, the understanding of financial misconduct, the consequences of financial misconduct, and the success of the measures we put in place in the supply chain environment particularly, sees us being responsible for the 11 million and having to deal with that. Two big themes again. One is a line item called Schedule All, which is a software package that procures services and that operates outside supply chain, and we're in the course of bringing that into the supply chain umbrella to ensure that we don't have that repeat finding anymore. The other big contributor was payments without contracts. That is actually two big instances only, and both of them have been concluded since. So I hope that gives a bit of context to our irregular and fruitless and wasteful expenditure. Bringing me to the audit outcome analysis, greens and reds speak to the progress that we've been making over the past years, and particularly been in the last 3 years, where we have moved, to give you a sense, from 214 findings to 86 in the current financial year, so 60% less findings than what we had 3 years ago. And since supply chain and its consequence being irregular expenditure is often a contributor, supply chain findings in the same period reduced from 22 to 6, of which only the irregular expenditure in the opening balance that's not complete is the result of the qualification we still have this year. And I hope by now you've also got a sense of what the organization has done and continues to do to be able to ensure that we do not have that repeat finding again. Maybe just to note, our plan is, and the AG did refer to it, to conclude the work on the completeness from 1 April 2018 to date in this financial year, and then to start discussions with National Treasury on a consideration for ring-fencing irregular expenditure before that period, given the measures and checks and balances we've put in place in the last years. Then moving on to the CDOs, as much as there's already been a reflection on it, the 59% is what we had a year ago, 42 as the DM indicated. Main contributors were the underperformance in digital and human resources, and that is as a result of a combination of the transitioning activities in our operating model, the consultation, implementation and the rollout of that, which meant we had to suspend the HR initiative. And in digital, it was particularly the interruptions in our supply chain environment, both internally and externally. Hopefully good news would be that we have managed to actually enhance the governance performance from 50% to 67%. And with that, Chairperson, I will hand back to yourself. Thank you very much.
Honourable Chair, that concludes our presentation. We would like to hand over back to you, sir.
Thank you very much, Chair. Over to you.
No, thank you, DM and the SABC team. I will now invite members who want to contribute at this point on the full presentation. Honorable Mlala. Can I now recognize hands that would want to make a contribution, honorable members?
Chair, or what do you say?
Yeah, you were unmuted, so we can hear the background. So I thought maybe it's because you can't move the hand, so you want to raise the hand and speak on the SAPC and the department presentation.
Yeah, no, Chair. I think I must first welcome the presentation by DM and the SABC. I think both the DM and the SABC should be applauded because I think SABC is turning a corner. We can see that there's difference between the SABC that we used to work with and now. However, there's two key things that the AG has raised. I think CFO has tried to explain, but maybe he must do more. The first one is around the finding that says that the SABC did not take disciplinary steps in with regard to that irregular expenditure. Maybe if they can explain why are they not taking steps in that regard. The second one is that the AG has said that in terms of the current, the financial year in question, SABC has the new irregular expenditure of 311 million in terms of what the AG is reported. Now, the question is what actions are they going to take? Are they still going to ignore the AG's request that they take necessary disciplinary actions against people who are involved, and they should also give us timelines. When are they doing that? And then with regard to the department, I think the main issue of integrating the regression in terms of AG is the integration of the two departments, DOC and DCDT. But there's also a material non-compliance that the DM touched on, but maybe you can elaborate more on it. Why that material non-compliance? What was happening? Is it in relation to staff complements? Maybe just to be specific on two areas. I think those would be my question. And as far as we know, maybe also DM should also say now that they are one department, how far are they, can they finalize especially the staff component so that we know now we no longer have one DG, we no longer have acting DG, acting everybody in Hollywood. At least we should have timelines by end of next financial year. We should be able to say the department, because in terms of the last guidelines that we agreed on was that by end of 2021 financial year, the department should be one, and the structure and everything else should have been finalized. Can we have that commitment from the DM? Thanks, Chair.
Thank you, Honorable Mulala. Any other member would want to speak before I give to the department and the SABC? On my side, I do not see any other hand. And for that reason, I would give the DM and the team to respond to that question.
Thank you very much, Chairperson. And thanks to the members of the questions. Chair, I'm going to ask that you allow us to get the team from the SABC to respond on the issue of the regular expenditure that was raised by Honorable Mulala, and after which we will get the acting DG just to give progress report on the process of the finalization of the organizational structure, and then the CFO to respond to the AG, and then I'll come in to sort of give the parting shot. But if the chair of the CBC has got some comments to make, we can also allow him to do that. SABC?
Thank you, Deputy Minister. On the questions that we ask, I would request the CFO to assist with the responses because they relate all to financial and audit findings. Ms. Van der Leeuwen?
Thank you very much, my board chair, the committee chair, and Honorable Mulala. Chair of the committee, I'm going to take 1 minute to maybe firstly just list the kind of initiatives that we have implemented around both irregular expenditure as well as consequence management in the last probably 2 years or so. That sees as a report, 111 million now, for the in-year instances versus the 336 million that are comparable and relates to 3 years ago. So we've reviewed BSC and BEC terms of references. All the members are officially appointed. There's formal lessons being learned from every previous audit as well as from tenders that have been concluded. There's regular training for these committee members as well as for management. We have had a number of sessions where Treasury was leading, facilitating the training, but we also do it internally. There's a compliance department that's been established that, together with group internal audit, review a certain identified tenders, typically those that are high risk, complex, or of a certain value. They issue reports that are part of our tender adjudication process. There's compliance checklist been established, as well as self-assessment compliance checklist for the initiatives that are below certain levels, in the RFQs particularly. We've reviewed our SCM policy and SOP in the past year. We have a very good working relationship with National Treasury. Our SCM and financial misconduct, sorry, there seems to be an issue with the... because that's not the camera working. Forgive me, Chairperson, we realized it's the computer, not the right camera that we thought was working. So I think for now you can see me for the first time, in fact. So to go back to my comments, SCM and financial misconduct reviews are also included in the induction program for all new employees at this time. We have attended to in supply chain to all the AGSA irregular expenditure findings in terms of consequence management for the past 3 years.
We are currently tackling this year. There was one irregular expenditure finding in the IGSA report this financial year under review, and that one is going to be dealt with in the next month or so. We regularly test the markets when we look at our STM initiatives to ensure that we don't have deviations, expansions, or evergreen contracts, but also to ensure that we have a good sense of what and where we have deviations and expansions to absolutely the extraordinary and critical ones. We have matured the approach to the development of our APP, our demand management, and any extraordinary items in that, again, to reduce expansions, deviations, etc. There's SLAs in place between supply chain and business unit to ensure that there's better planning so that we don't have the risk of irregular expenditure. For the first time in 4 years, we have an SCM HOD that joined us, or head of department, forgive me, that joined us now on 1 November. We developed a guideline for the consequence management of financial misconduct, and we're currently operating according to that under the oversight of a loss control committee that's been established in terms of a formal terms of reference. Reports into EXCO and the Audit and Risk Committee. They preside over all the condemnation requests and ensure that consequence management is consistently and appropriately applied, and they give guidance and advice. We have enhanced the team that is responsible for the irregular expenditure project with fixed-term contractors, both to help deal with the opening balance and ensuring the completeness, as I alluded to earlier, but also recently with two investigators, senior investigators, who's going to help us conclude the investigations, particularly on historic items, because that's where the challenge is. The historic items, both in terms of securing documentation, as well as determining responsibilities, so that we can pursue the consequence management as well. So this team is currently part of us for the next year, and we hope that they will contribute towards our vision of avoiding a further qualification related to completeness of the register by the end of the financial year we're currently in. Then we have also established a project management function in supply chain, again with the goal of ensuring there's better planning, seamless integration between the teams, so that we can avoid the risk of irregular expenditure. So Honourable Malala, I've given you a sense that we are definitely not ignoring the AG and their recommendations around consequence management. Their focus was on some individuals in prior years where we have not yet managed to get to the consequence management, and it's in particular where the balances before 2018 for the reasons that we know of previous management, long sad history, many employees have left the organization already, record keeping that might not be what it is today to allow us to respond efficiently to it, and there is a plan. Currently from 1 April 2018 to date, we know exactly how many instances of consequence management we still need to conclude on. Our goal is to have that done before the end of this financial year. There's a project plan in place to deal with that specifically. The majority of that finding sits in supply chain management, so the team knows what's expected of them. We track it monthly to ensure that the progress is what it should be. The next step, once the consequence management is done, is then to proceed with a condemnation request towards the Loss Control Committee to National Treasury ultimately. So I hope, Honourable Malala, that gives you a sense of we know exactly what is expected of us. We know the quantum of what we need to deal with. We have a clear indication of the timelines, and that as far as myself as responsible is concerned is not negotiable. And we hope that you will hold us to account when we report back to you on the performance for the current financial year, a year from now. Thank you, Chair of the committee. I hand back to you.
CFO of the department.
Thank you, Deputy Minister. to the material non-compliance issues that were raised by the Auditor General is relating to the assessment that was not done by the department on the irregular expenditure that was incurred by the former DOC when AG was finalizing the annual report for the former DOC. So we have since finalized the assessment, and we finalizing the report to be submitted to the acting DG, and so to ensure consequence management as well. And also I must indicate that we are constantly engaging National Treasury in some of the cases that are also lying in our register coming from the previous financial years. And these are old cases that are coming through. We're trying to deal with all those cases that are very old in our register check. But though that is the non-compliance that AG referred to. Thank you, Chair.
ADG.
Thank you, Chair. And to you. The question with regards to the stability in the department, certainly, Chair, it remains a priority for us, and hence we have this as an APP target. What we had done is that we had drafted an organizational structure. When we had to change in terms of administration, we've now come up in terms of the revised outlook in terms of for the portfolio as well as for the department in terms of what we need to, the areas that you should be focusing on. So what we have is an operating model that we are currently under as we are migrating towards the revised structure. The draft organizational structure, we are consulting DPSA, and we are hoping that we would get a positive feedback and thereafter would commence with the placement. Unfortunately, Chair, I'm not able to give an indication in terms of time frame because this also consultations with the unit and as well as then the DPSA as well as National Treasury for funding. Thank you very much.
Thank you very much.
Maybe DM, so that you, because you said you'll be doing almost like those are on your side, maybe that just on where we are now, because I think what Honorable Mlala was trying to get as timelines in finalizing the matter, whether this will be by end of the financial year, I think the response of the acting DG, it's more like not give Honorable this matter would then be addressed, so it will then become a repetitive matter that gets raised by end of the financial year. But again, maybe as you respond, the imp of that, just to the department itself, understanding that by the 1st of April last year already, we would have had this measure where we would have one department. So I'm taking it so that it's not like we met on paper, we have one, but we are still probably operating with old organizational structures. When we have now the department as one, there's no longer DCPS or DOC. I think that question that Honorable Mlala was asking, it's also along those lines so that we can be able to respond appropriately when this question arises. And that is dependent, again, as I say, on timelines. And the worry may also be that, because this, that's a build-up question on it, it's whether then that instability at that level may be the cause of incapacity to investigate and act against people that you need to act against what the AG raised as no consequence from the side of the department. So I'm just saying as you are to close, as if those gaps could be closed. Thank you.
Thank you very much, Chair, and thank you for your addition. Let me just start with the SABC just comments there, and then I will deal with the issue of the structure and the completion of the merger of the two departments. Chair, I think I agree with the Honorable Molale that indeed the SABC is turning a corner. There is much more stability when you look at the SABC. We have had an engagement with them, and the sense that we got is that this is an organization that is serious about restoring the integrity of the public broadcaster, making sure that the public broadcaster continues to execute its public mandate and so forth. So I agree with that observation. If you look at the targets that were set on the turnaround plan, which of course the department is also exercising oversight over the implementation of this plan through these regular meetings where Treasury, National Treasury is also involved. We're almost in the second year of the implementation, going towards the third year, and you can see there's 90% achievement of the targets that were set in the turnaround plan. So there is a lot more focus in terms of turning the SABC around. What of course remains our concern still is the issue of revenue. Because if you can look at the report that I presented, it's about 5 billion of revenue against the expenditure of 5.6 billion, which expenditure is still covered in the main by the 3-year MTF allocation from Treasury. So there is the need to ramp up revenue to identify areas where the commercial elements of the SABC can be much more sure that we gain the necessary revenue that we require from there. With regard to the department, Chair, the issue of the organizational structure, which I think is almost the last mile of implementing a complete merger of the two departments. It's one of the outstanding issues. There was some consultation with labor, as you know that these matters do affect labor, and there has to be a necessary consultation. And that consultation has been concluded. But of course, there is this rethinking about developing this operating model, which the minister has been pioneering, where in particular working groups has been established, which are also going to inform the finalization of the structure. The intention, Chair, is to get a date as soon as possible to finalize almost like the overarching strategic framework, which will finally inform the structure. And we are hoping to do this before the end of the financial year. In fact, as we are speaking now, we've been discussing this issue as early as last week, to try and get a date wherein we will thresh out these issues and we'll finally have a structure that is finalized, costed, and then submitted to National Treasury. So we hope to complete this task, Chair. In fact, we can we can sort of, because Honorable Mlala wants us to make a commitment that we should, it is our intention, Chair, that we should finalize this. And the Minister is very firm on that. We should finalize this before the end of the financial year, so that come the 1st of April, we're operating on an approved organizational structure. Because the approval of the final organizational structure will help us to fill the key vacancies now. There's a couple of vacancies, as you know, in the department, including the Director General is acting. So the sooner we finalize the structure, will enable us to fill that critical position and a number of vacancies of the DDGs. And so it is our intention, Chair, to finalize this thing by the end of this financial year. That's what we are working towards, Chairperson. But in the overall, Chair, we are hoping that in the new year, the Portfolio Committee will give us some time to come and speak to the honorable members about this revised plan on the broadcasting digital migration. It's a question that is an issue that we presented here. There's been an underachievement, and we did indicate that there's a new plan that has been approved by Cabinet, which we are working on. I noticed that members did not raise question about that. I think they are happy. But we still do want to come back and brief the Portfolio Committee on this issue of the broadcasting digital migration, so that we are on the same page. But yeah, generally we are working with the department to make sure that we improve the performance. As you can see, that our performance was 50%. It's a pass mark, so to speak, in academia. But we are not very proud of that. Although we understand what led to the areas of non-performance, but we still think that we can make some improvements as far as that is concerned, including on the areas that are raised by the Auditor General. We have noted them. We have noted what the Auditor General said, even about other entities, and flagged the issue of SABO, the South African Post Office, the going concern status. At an appropriate time, Chair, I think we'll come and have a conversation with the Portfolio Committee just to update you on the efforts that we are taking to try and rescue that entity. At an appropriate time, Chair, but otherwise, we'd like to take this opportunity, Chair, to thank the members for their questions and for you allowing us to come and share with you our annual report and the audited financial statements. Thank you very much.
Well, thank you, Deputy Minister. I do not see any other hand that's making a follow-up question, and I take it therefore that this takes us almost to the end of the meeting, given the presentations made. So, yeah, because I'm still trying to share if there's anyone. So I think we should really thank you, Deputy Minister, and the SABC team as led by its board and the executives that are present on the call. I think what's important is really that we should be monitoring the implementation of the action plans that you are committing to, including the timelines that you are putting forward, and that we do not wait until the end when it is the AG that advises that in here we should really get feedback on this. And I think from the committee side, we have already put together a resolution tracing mechanism which we shared with the department, so that whenever the entities do come before the committee or the department itself, irrespective of the matters that would be on the table, that is a starting point. We do get progress reports on resolutions that would have been made, which includes, as I said, the implementation of the action plan in response to what the Auditor General would have raised. Indeed, Deputy Minister, I will create that time as and when you are ready to brief us on the matters you would want to brief us. Indeed, SAPO, it's an important matter for us. So would have allowed you space because of the request made that you would want to look at the turnaround strategy that they've put together and see how best that could make the post office to be self-sustainable. So that even at the time we talk about financial injection, it should not be about throwing money to problems, but throwing money to a plan that seeks to give sustainability. And I think the same approach would have been used in the bailout for the SCBC. So I'm just saying we'll create that that space. That includes the BDM aspect. Members may have not spent time on it now because the entities that have to carry out that task will also be coming before the committee and will be able to look at a full picture of both the entity oversight that we do as the department, but more importantly, those that are tasked with the implementation being the entities concerned. So I'm just saying we do appreciate that point, Honourable Deputy Minister. But indeed, as the committee, we always appreciate good work. So what they've said it in our records, that in that progress that's being made in SABC gets undermined by what has been called historic. And we are happy to hear that the EPA team come together to ensure that the historic is addressed whilst there are initiatives in place to ensure that you do not have new irregular expenditure or matters that the AG may raise out of lack of controls and so on. So we'll keep an eye on that because it's in our interest that the public broadcaster is repositioned and that everybody would be looking at it as their pride as a country. So it's in our interest that we see that that happening. Of course, the issue about performance will always be linked, Deputy Minister, with what we have raised in the committee. That whilst compliance in reporting will be about if you have not passed the bill, that has not been achieved. But there's a lot of work that goes into that. And therefore, just to build accountability in terms of what we appropriate, we should be able to explain even to the ordinary, why are you at 50% what you call the passive mark, Madoda score? I'm not referring to the CEO of SABC. That's how it's called in the CASA language, the Madoda score. For as long as I'm on that side. In that score, we would want that explanation so that it's understood that that was appropriated, was used properly, whilst achievement as in compliance report is not there but this is the work that has been done probably at 90%. And the reason we're raising this point is that we're almost 3 years in the sixth administration. And these bills have become timeline change. And that also then questions the work of the committee itself. So as you come back, I think you also need to refine the timeline, so that we have specific timelines on when a particular bill will be coming to Parliament, having been approved in all other levels of approval. So that at least when we make that pronouncement, that we are addressing that AG aspect, but also on our side, we are ready to ensure that from the Parliament side, we do not play the role of delaying what needs to happen. So I just, in closing, we should really assure you that we would want to work together with yourselves to get this portfolio turning around from the regression that the Auditor General would have spoken to. It's in our interest that we have green throughout, but we know that it may take a bit of time, but working together, we can shorten that time. So I just thought on behalf of the committee, I must say that before we get to close the meeting. Hajira, anything that you'll be taking out? Hajira?
Hajira has left the chair, yeah. So only.
Oh, I saw her coming back to the coast.
Yeah, good afternoon, Chair. It's Tim Ngozi. She's also just like I have been, Chair, but I think for now, Chair, we are on it. Yes, but she is not online, but I think for now we are on it. Thank you very much.
All right, no, thank you. But just to remind the reflection on the Auditor General and give the feedback as per the forms that have been sent to you. We appreciate that we respond to those. Otherwise, honourable members, we have now come to the end of the meeting. So that before the business for today has been achieved. Thank you once more. The meeting stays adjourned. Until tomorrow, like I said, we are bringing forward two other entities, so it should be complete by tomorrow. Thank you.
Thank you,
Chair. Thank you, Makoto.
Zakiya.